If you like playing in the field of possibilities and getting your information from those who really know, Conversation at the Cutting Edge is your kind of program. Host Sandy Sedgebeer speaks with teachers, speakers, scientists, and authors that are shifting perceptions about who we are and what we're capable of. Get ready to expand your awareness and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. Here's Sandy.
Hello, and welcome to Conversation at the Cutting Edge. I'm your host, Sandy Sedgebeer, and tonight we're going to be talking about what happens when life suddenly throws something at you that changes everything you thought was a constant. How do you cope when a health crisis occurs, a relationship suddenly ends, you get laid off at work, or worse yet, a much-loved friend or relative dies? From where does the strength come to not just survive such events, but to thrive? My companion in this conversation is someone who knows exactly how to cope with such events and how to move on and thrive after them. Edie Weinstein is a journalist, speaker, PR goddess, and host of the show It's All About Relationships here on Vivid Life. She's not only survived several major life crises, but she's mastered the art of bouncing back by rising to the challenge of everything that life has thrown at her. Edie Weinstein, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. And as I was telling you before the show, it's lovely to be on the other side of the microphone. Normally when I do my show, as I said, I've got everything spread out on the dining room table. I'm usually in work mode. I'm in receptivity mode right now, lounging on the couch. So thank you for
Wonderful.
The opportunity.
You are so welcome. Edie, you describe yourself as an optimistic who sees the world through the eyes of possibility. Were you always an optimistic person, or did the challenges that you faced in your life force you to become one?
Well, I would like to think that I was born into a family that taught me resilience, that taught me that I could see the glasses half full or half empty. And what I've learned is that it's all full, that even if it's only half full of liquid, it's all the other half is air. So I grew up in a family that, despite some challenges that my father had himself, he was born into a Russian immigrant family, pretty poor financially, but rich in love. I learned that we could get through, and I could get through anything. So I was able to look at life through the eyes of optimism. Now, the optimistic came to me in either a meditation or a dream. The words came to me, and I said, "What does that mean?" And spirit, whoever, whatever, said, "You'll know." And I decided that it meant seeing the world through the eyes of possibility, that anything is possible. So, yeah, but equal, I think I grew into it as well. The more I experience life, the more I strengthen those muscles.
You know, it's one thing to be of an optimistic nature, but when you have one challenge after another, as you did in 1992, it must feel as if the whole world is against you. How did you cope? And tell us a little bit about that, and tell us how you coped.
Well, it's funny. I never thought that the world was against me. I've never felt that when life happens, it's life happening to me. I always felt like it was life happening for me. I called 1992, lovingly called it, our year from hell. My husband and I had started a magazine in 1998 called Visions. It was about holistic health and wellness, and it was where I cut my teeth on journalism. And we had decided that we were going to move from the Philadelphia area where we started it to South Florida. My parents were there. They had retired. We thought, you know, living in paradise would be ideal for us. So we, packed up and moved down to South Florida and created a second regional edition of our magazine. And in 1992, we had a series of life events. In February of that year, we adopted our son, who was 5, now is 20, he'll be 28 next week. In March of that year, I had an ectopic pregnancy. And for those who don't know what that is, it means baby develops in the fallopian tube and it ruptures because that body part is not meant to contain a baby. I didn't even know I was pregnant at the time, so I almost hemorrhaged to death. Then shortly after that, in May, my husband was diagnosed with hepatitis C, which is a serious liver disease and is left unsuccessfully treated, ends badly. So he's That happened in May. In August of 1992, we were living in Homestead. And for those for whom that sounds familiar, Homestead, Florida was ground zero for Hurricane Andrew. So we lost our home to Hurricane Andrew. And with that, the South Florida edition of our magazine. in early 1993, we moved back up to the area where we are now, outside where, you know, where I am now, outside of Philadelphia. 6 years later, Michael did die from hepatitis C, and I became a single parent at 40, and said, "Okay, now what?" You know, because that's been my, you know, my mantra lately. Rather than, "Oh God, now what?" It's, "Now what? All right, what's the next step?" So that's kind of what happened.
How did you find the strength to bounce back from all of that?
Well, I had loving friends and family who were my treasures. My parents were alive at the time, and they have been my most forever been my most ardent cheerleaders. So I knew they had my back. I have wonderful friends. I have, you know, my spiritual faith. What else? Resilience, learned resilience. I don't know that I was born with it, but I learned it. And so I think that's what helped as well. And I've been a therapist in one form or another for 30 years. So I figured I better practice what I preach.
And then more recently, you had a heart attack.
I had a series of, I had a heart attack, but I had a series of health crises. A year ago, at the end of, what year was that? I'm losing track of time. 2013, I had shingles. And I always thought only older people got shingles. I'm 56 years old now. Never a million years imagined that. The whole left side of my face looked like a Klingon from Star Trek. And it was all swollen. My left eye was swollen shut. And I went through this experience of fear, like, oh, my God, what if it doesn't get better? What if the pain in my head, like, it's like a chisel. For anybody who's ever had shingles, it was like a chisel going through my head and my eye. What if I lose the vision in my left eye? And I thought, how do people live with the uncertainty? How do they live with chronic pain? And then I said, all right, we're going to do this. We're going to get through this. And I gave myself a pep talk. I said, all right, we're going to make this work. It's going to be fine. So a month later, everything was better. And I still get what I call the shingles tingles, like a neurological little tickle on my forehead. But my vision is fine. No more pain. I don't look like a Klingon anymore. You know, I look fairly decent. You know, I look like a human being now. So that was one crisis. Then in June of 2014, on my way home from the gym, from what I thought was a normal workout, I had a heart attack. And again, unexpected. Then a month after that, I had kidney stones. So I thought, all right, what's this about? I still never thought, you know, why is the universe against me? I just said, all right, how can I rise to this occasion? And then a month or so after that, in the course of having some medical tests, they have these incidental findings, you know, that something else shows up. It turned out that I had adrenal fatigue. And so that was my series of life getting lifey, if you want to call it that.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like you were, forgive me for saying this, but there were times when everything happens one after the other and you just get so pissed off with it. You don't want anyone being optimistic around you. You just want to cuss and have your moment. Did you ever feel like that?
Not intentionally. I didn't give myself permission to get have a pity party very, very often. And I like to say that I do it occasionally, but I leave quickly when I realize I'm the only guest there. But I have people in my life that tell me, you have the right to be angry. You have the right to feel whatever you want to feel. Same thing I would tell anybody else. So I have people in my life that call me on my stuff, you know, that make sure that I practice what I preach. And I've had this tendency to minimize my stuff because, after all, other people have it so much worse than I do, and other people don't have the resources and the supports that I do. So how could I possibly complain? No, I'm being sarcastic, you can tell. But I've come to realize that I have the right to feel what, you know, whatever comes up for me, and by resisting the shadow side of it, by resisting the emotional component, it sticks around longer. So I'm learning to be in the moment with whatever I'm experiencing.
So if you get pissed off, it's okay to express it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I do what I call God wrestling. You know, I say, okay, come on. How much more are we going to do here? And I don't want to challenge the divine and say, all right, bring it on, because I think I'm done. I think I've had enough. You know. And the thing is, when I had the heart attack, I wasn't afraid of dying. I was more afraid of being incapacitated. I was more afraid of not being able to keep up with everything that I thought that I was supposed to do in order to have a happy life. And what I've learned and what I now share with other people is that I don't have to be Wonder Woman. You know, I do a presentation called From Wonder Woman to the Bionic Woman because I thought I had to be all things to all people and fix, save, heal, cure, you know, practice savior behavior. And instead, I call myself a Bionic Woman because I know how to stent that's propping open my artery. So I've learned to be fully human as well.
When we spoke earlier this week, you said something about the heart attack forced you to revisit all the beliefs you had about living your passion in an addictive way. Say more about that.
Sure. I came to realize that I'm a workaholic. I worked in the addictions field, you know, drug and alcohol addictions field for 30 years as well, both as an educator and a therapist. And I realized, and I knew a long time ago that I was codependent. I knew that I was, again, the caregiver and the fixer-upper. But I hadn't realized how addicted I was to work. And I came by it naturally. My father was a workaholic as well. And the roots of the workaholism were the same for both of us. It was fear of not being able to make ends meet. As I said, he had an impoverished childhood. I didn't. My parents were able to support us. I mean, we're a middle-class family, but we never wanted for anything. And again, another part of another aspect was being rich in love. But as a single parent, as somebody widowed at 40, I'm still in the same house that I was in when my husband died, and I've been able to make ends meet, but there was a fear that, oh, my God, what if I can't? So I was on a virtual, not a literal, but a virtual treadmill, and just kept on going for fear that I wouldn't be able to support us, my son and myself. And what I was doing was working 12-hour-plus days, sleeping maybe 5 or 6 hours a night, and ignoring the symptoms that probably were there a year at least or two prior to the heart attack. And my body said, we're not going to let you ignore this anymore, woman. You're done. you got to put the brakes on. So paradoxically, I'm grateful for this heart attack because had this one not happened, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation. I would be gone because if I had let things go, it would have killed me. So I'm grateful that it happened the way it did.
You're listening to Conversation at the Cutting Edge, and I'm talking to journalist, speaker, author, and radio show host Edie Weinstein about how we can learn to cope with sudden and abrupt life changes by becoming adept at the art of bouncing back. After the break, Edie is going to share some strategies, tools, and tips for how to develop resilience. We'll be back in a few moments, so stay tuned.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What is the first step for you personally to finally make the shift you have been seeking? Find out right now by connecting with us on Facebook and on Twitter. My Vivid Life. Well, it's a state of being, complete well-being. Get there today with daily inspiration right to your inbox.
Are you ready to create the life of your dreams filled with joy and abundance? Imagine surrounding yourself with the world's top spiritual teachers and visionaries that will teach you their secrets to living a successful, healthy, and joyful life. Join Iyanla Van Zandt, Caroline Mace, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and over 20 more life-changing best-selling authors at this year's Celebrate Your Life Chicago event. Visit CelebrateYourLife.org for more information. That's CelebrateYourLife.org. And reserve your seat now. That's CelebrateYourLife.org.
You cannot separate who you are and what you do from how you interact with the world. Marketing was never meant to be slick and soulless. If you're looking to build your personal or business profile and platform and connect with the audience that resonates with you and your message, visit www.sandysedgebeer.com and discover what 30-plus years of applying the science of resonance in international publishing, marketing, and conscious business development can do.
Vivid Life Radio connects you with the most current, optimistic, and inspiring information on the planet. Get ready to open your mind, heal your heart, and start living your ultimate life. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for more details on our upcoming broadcast with the world's brightest minds sharing wisdom to uplift your spirit.
Welcome back to Conversation at the Cutting Edge. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with author, speaker, radio show host, and bliss coach, Edie Weinstein, about the art of bouncing back when life throws you unexpected curveballs. Edie, you call yourself a bliss mistress. That's a title that could get you a bad name, or a good one, depending on one's perspective. But seriously, you're a bliss coach, and you teach people how to be the mistress or master of their own bliss. What does that entail?
Well, it's different for every person. Where the name came from, first of all, is that I was inspired by Joseph Campbell, who coined the phrase, follow your bliss. And I thought, yeah, that's a pretty cool thing to strive for, but what if we could BYOB, be your own bliss? So a few years ago, I started teaching a workshop by that name. On the way into the workshop, one of the participants says, oh, you're the bliss master. You're going to teach us how to master bliss. And I did the workshop, and when I came home, I called a friend of mine, told him about it. He says, oh, no, not bliss master, bliss mistress. And you know how when you know somebody, and even if you're on the phone with them, you could see the twinkle in their eye all the way across the country. He was living in San Francisco at the time. He says, but if you're going to call yourself that, you better be living it. So every day, do something that you feel blissful about. So I teach people how to take a look at what lights them up from the inside, what turns them into a human sparkler is how I look at it. So for one person, it might be dancing. For another person, it might be walking in nature. For another person, it might be being around children or animals, or, you know, being in love. For me, you know, my bliss is writing. I can't not write. And it just comes through me. Like, you know, I say I don't get writer's block, I get writer's runs. So I ask people to take a look at what their, you know, I can't not do this thing is, what, you know, what just buzzes them up. So that's what I do is the first step. And then allow them to imagine what it's like to live that way, to do at least one thing every day that feels blissful. And it doesn't have to be, you know, jumping up and down like a kid on a pogo stick. It can be very still and silent. So it's whatever that feels like for you.
Was writing one of the strategies that you used to help yourself in those years after your husband's death?
Yeah, absolutely. I kept on writing. We had sold the magazine before he died, and then I became a freelance journalist, and I did a lot of interviews with some pretty heavy hitters. I call them movers and shakers, everyone from Ram Dass to Bernie Siegel, who, you know, Bernie's been a guest on my show, and probably the heaviest hitter of all, although it's kind of paradoxical to call him that because he's a pacifist and a Buddhist, is His Holiness the Dalai Lama. And that interview came in 2008, the same year, a few months after my father died. That was another thing. I am an adult orphan as well. My dad died in 2008, my mom in 2010. Excuse me. And as I said, they had both been ardent cheerleaders. So writing kept me going. And then after the heart attack, the same thing. I write for the Huffington Post, also for Vivid Life, obviously. And I write for Elephant Journal, BeliefNet. And writing about my experience is what really really helps. You know, writing about all that makes a huge difference. So I encourage people to write if they like to write, even if it's scribble, even if they don't see themselves as being wonderful writers. Just get it out there. Telling our stories is incredibly healing. That's a bouncing back skill, is being able to talk about it. Now realizing that you are not your victim story, but to be able to share, this is what happened to me. I want to be heard. So that's one strategy. Another one is realizing that you have survived everything that has ever happened in your life because you're here to tell about it. So even there are people that have horrendous childhoods. I have dear friends who are abuse survivors, and to them I often say, you know, you're a lot more sane than you have any right to expect to be given your history. And they laugh, of course. But it tells them that they have bounced back. They are made of rubber also. So that's another strategy, is to realize, yeah, I made it through this. So what makes me think I'm not going to make it through this thing?
I know that you told me that one of the things that you share with people is you tell them to share their story, but they are not their story. That can be hard for someone, especially if they've been through an incredible trauma or shock, or they're deep in the throes of grief, you know, to actually, because you really do feel like you are your story at that point.
Yeah, and I say it compassionately. I don't say get over it, knock it off, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. What I say is, how does it feel when you believe this about your life? You know, when you believe that you're a victim and you're never going to be anything else, it doesn't feel very good. And what's the payoff to feeling like nothing is ever going to get any better? I had no payoff at all. You know, thinking, okay, I'm going to feel like this forever. My life is always going to suck. And, you know, and again, I'm not making fun of anybody, because for some people, life does suck. For some people, you know, they don't have the supports. They don't have the emotional resources that I do. I feel incredibly blessed. But humor helps. Absolutely. I can say that that's a coping skill. That's a bouncing back skill too. Finding the humor, even the bizarre, absurd humor in whatever is going on, makes a difference as well. So I encourage people to find a way to laugh at your other situation.
I think that's a good one, because, you know, if I've had two experiences in my life that I call the dark night of the soul. And at that time, of course, I was a lot younger. It was very hard to get myself out of that black pit. However, the one thing that did save me was humor, and being able to watch a movie or a comedy show or something that just tickles your funny bone, I think. And once you can begin to laugh, then it gets easier, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing that I do whenever I've had those dark nights of the soul, I mean, I can honestly say that I've never been clinically depressed. You know, I felt very fortunate about that. But when I have the dark nights of the soul, I channel my inner Annie. And I think, you know, and I think the sun will come out tomorrow. You know, I remember that. It always does. It never doesn't come out. Until the very last breath that I take, I still got more living to do. So I know that I have a choice about how I live. I don't have a choice necessarily about the circumstances, but I have a choice about how I live through those circumstances.
Before we bring the show to an end, Dee Dee, tell us about your book, The Bliss Mistress Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary.
Yes, the book came about at the same time the Bliss Mistress got born. I've been a freelance journalist, as I mentioned, for years, writing tons of articles, and friends inevitably said, you know, when are you going to finish the book? And I had one friend that lovingly kicked my tush into finishing it, saying, this book is not doing anybody any good in your head, finish the book. And I dragged my feet a little bit, and my mother, who was on hospice for 6 months before she died in 2010, was really the final catalyst. She said, you need to finish this book so I can read it. And I said, well, then you're going to have to live a whole lot longer, because I'm not anywhere near done. So when I went down to visit her in Florida, I sat by her bedside, sat on the floor, had my laptop, went to my, you know, my offices away from home, Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks, and I finished the book. The last two chapters were about our hospice journey. And the chapters are like chicken soup for the soul kind of stories, anecdotes, slice of life stories. And then the final chapter, the bonus chapter, is the interview with the Dalai Lama from back in 2008. And it's a really easy reading book. I tell people it makes great bathroom reading, because the chapters are fairly short. And it's a companion book. It helps people to learn how to transform their lives from what it is they're experiencing now to what they would like. So the book is available via Amazon or Barnes & Noble. People can also find out about what I do via my website, which is Optimistical, OPTI-Mystical, MYSTICAL.com. And they could see the different workshops that I teach, the different presentations that I do. I am portable. I am happy to travel to speak to your group. I'm happy to write for publications. I'm happy to spread the word about how to live a ritual, juicy life in the face of life getting lifey, because that's what we got. this is what we're presented with. So it's up to us to decide how we want to live it, and I choose to live it with an open heart, literally and figuratively, as I experienced a whole life makeover. And I encourage other people not to wait till they have a health crisis before they do a whole life makeover, before they love completely, before they live their dreams and live their bliss. So that's what I got.
Edie, if there was one thing that you had to resort to say to someone who really was in the depths, have you ever come across something that really shifts your perception or reframes something, any phrase that you like mm-hmm. to use in situations like that?
Mm-hmm. Yep. One of them is to remember, and I know this sounds corny and hokey, but love is all you are. It's not just the Beatles, you know, singing love is all, you know, what is it? Is it love is all there is? Yeah. But love is all you are. And if you were love, if you knew that you were love incarnate, it's like that bracelet that some people wear, WWJD, you know, what would Jesus do? I would love to see one, and it probably is out there somewhere, WWLD, what would love do? So if you knew that you were love incarnate, how would you live every moment of your life? You know, you would be, you know, your heart chakra would be open. You would be willing to give and receive love. So I encourage people to do that, to see themselves and everybody they encounter as love incarnate, and that everything that happens is happening for us, not to us. So that works for me.
Well, I think it will work for me too. Edie, I love your website name, Optimistical. Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
It's been fun speaking with you, Edie.
Absolutely.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of this show. If you wish to learn more about me and the services I offer for teachers, speakers, authors, and conscious businesses looking to build their platforms and expand their profiles, you can visit my website at sedgebeer.com, where you can also sign up for my News from the Edge newsletter. The theme tune for this show is from an original song called Searching by Grammy Award-winning producer, composer, and musician Barry Goldstein. I'm Sandy Sedgebeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to having your company at the same time next week. Till then, you can listen to more great shows live and in our archives here at vividlife.me.
Thank you for listening to Conversation at the Cutting Edge, where scientists, researchers, authors, and teachers working at the leading edge meet. For conversations that aim to shift your perceptions about who you are, why you're here, and what you can achieve when you open your mind, expand your awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. Join us next week, same time, with your host, Sandy Sedgebeer, for another Conversation at the Cutting Edge.
Are you ready to create the life of your dreams filled with joy and abundance? Imagine surrounding yourself with the world's top spiritual teachers and visionaries that will teach you their secrets to living a successful, healthy, and joyful life. Join Iyanla Van Zandt, Caroline Mace, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and over 20 more life-changing best-selling authors at this year's Celebrate Your Life Chicago event. Visit CelebrateYourLife.org for more information. That's CelebrateYourLife.org. And reserve your seat now. That's CelebrateYourLife.org.
You cannot separate who you are and what you do from how you interact with the world. Marketing was never meant to be slick and soulless. If you're looking to build your personal or business profile and platform and connect with the audience that resonates with you and your message, visit www.sandysedgebeer.com and discover what 30-plus years of applying the science of resonance in international publishing, marketing, and conscious business development can do.
Vivid Life Radio connects you with the most current, optimistic, and inspiring information on the planet. Get ready to open your mind, heal your heart, and start living your ultimate life. Go to vividlife.me, that's vividlife.me, for more details on our upcoming broadcast with the world's brightest minds sharing wisdom to uplift your spirit.